Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh. Drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Home, home, home. And sorry, I say fuck so much. I'm not the same, but I could be if I tried. Lord knows I got habits to pray.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of this show, recognize if they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustments to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. We are part of the group Late Night Poets, which is on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate in the show, but it's more fun if you do. You can read along with the poems that we are reading, and you can enter our contests to join in the fun. I'm Afaziana, and with me I have my co-host, Babbler. How are you tonight,
Hello.
Babbler?
I am doing all right. I had a nice long work day, and then I went for a 3-mile walk, and I just got back.
That's an impressive walk.
How are you doing? Yeah, it was nice.
Good.
It was nice. The weather is super nice.
Very nice. It's rainy here today, but I actually don't mind that. I'm kind of a weirdo. I like the rain. We tend to get forest fires here, so if there's rain, that means there's not going to be smoke.
I am with you, especially in June. If it was my idea for weather, it would rain every night and be in the 70s every day.
That sounds nice.
Right?
No, it tends to be in the 90s, and then I'm just like a puddle, so a little cool rain and breeze is a good thing. And
yep.
Pam, are you with us?
I am, yes. Hello, ladies.
How is Pam tonight? You
too. I'm actually doing really good. I'm doing. My son went to bed at a decent time. My daughter helped me pick up the living room, and we got it done quick enough that her and I were able to watch some of this show called Nail It. It's where people try to make professional cakes, and they like come out absolute disasters. And there's a panel of judges, and I don't know, it just amuses me. But, yeah, so all in all, you know, except for the fact that our weather is not nice to me right now. I'm like you, Afaviana. Like, right now we've been having weather in the early 90s and, like, low 90s, which is just for this time of year, this area, for me, way too hot. Way too hot. It's miserable. But... Yeah, all in all,
today. Yeah. Well, that show sounds fun. I feel like I could be a contestant and mess everything up. I could be the example of what not to do.
Yes, me too. The funny thing is they still judge it on presentation, and sometimes you can make a really horrible cake, but if you did something extra creative, they give you extra points. And then they usually, like, if all the cakes are kind of equal and, like, not quite got it in looks, then they judge on taste. And there was one episode where all three judges took a bite of the cake and immediately spit it out. And for the other one, like,
not a good sign.
Not a good sign, yeah. But, No, you look like you have a great show tonight. Babbler picked out some awesome prompts. I liked the idea that Babbler that you went with a theme. Very cool there.
I have to agree. Babbler, will you share what the prompts were?
Yeah. All right. So the theme of tonight's contest was grit. And it was kind of open to interpretation what the meaning of grit is. So I had posted some quotes, some definitions, ideas. So I listed, how many was, like, 7 or 8 of those. But it was kind of open to, you know, how do you feel about the word grit? What does it mean to you? So I thought that would be interesting just because there are so many different ways that word can be taken. So that was the theme for the night. So
I'm excited to hear what people have to say about it. I didn't get a chance to pre-read everything like I sometimes like to. So I'm going to be, you know, pleasantly surprised the whole night. It's going to be great.
I'm one of those crazy people that always flies into it blind. I don't pre-read.
I usually like to check if there's anything like a little too wild for the show. But, you know, it's generally been
probably a good idea.
Good to go.
I
learned from
like
mistakes.
Wow, this is crazy, not appropriate. But...
may have done that once or twice. actually, Pam's usually like, read it.
Yeah, that would be me. Because, you know, after doing this for about, like, 3-4 years, and especially, you know, after midnight or even Wednesday nights, the sensual show, once you've gotten surprised more than once, in the middle of a show, you learn to scan.
I can see that, yeah.
It's true. I do like the surprise component if I haven't read it all, but it is wise to be prepared.
Absolutely. Oh, I did want to let you to know that I have brought Lynn on. So welcome, Lynn.
Oh, hi.
Hello,
hello. Hello. I don't know how long
welcome,
I can wait, but yeah.
That's okay. I actually had yours first on my list. So
oh,
I'm
cool.
glad that
and
Pam pointed out you're here because
I
was
don't
just...
Even... I'll go with the SoundCloud.
Okay, so you
want to
go with the
lazy.
SoundCloud and then just be able to comment after?
Cool.
Yeah?
I'll stay on as long as I make sense. You're going to kick me out if I stop making sense. You know, if I'm babbling and Lynn, you're tired, go to bed.
That's how I always am.
I don't think so.
Okay, so you prefer your SoundCloud or you want to read it yourself?
Oh, yes, my SoundCloud. Yeah, please.
Okay, great. Pam, whenever you're ready.
All right, let me find tweet. What is the name of your the poem?
Spit Out the Grit.
Okay, this must be it then. There we go.
Spit out the grit.
Spit out the grit.
Wouldn't it be awesome if life were always as smooth as scoops of homemade strawberry ice cream easing down our throat on lazy summer days? Sad truth is, oftentimes, we'll find grit in our leftover soup when we're at our hungriest. Yes, my friends, we've got to make the most of good times as they roll by, because we never know what's around the corner. When the road ahead is smooth and the sun is out, let the wind blow your hair as if driving the convertible of your dreams. Always be prepared to spit out the grit as you ride the roller coaster of your life.
Lovely piece.
Lovely
thank
piece.
You, Lynn.
Thank
you. I really enjoyed this. You guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hear you.
I really enjoyed this piece. Like, there was a nice softness to it. And then I feel like, you know, it's kind of saying life is really easy to take when it's going well, you know. It'd be really nice if life was always that great. Life was always as smooth as scoops of homemade ice cream, but it's not always that way. There's ups and there's downs, and on the downs, that's when the things are rough. That's when you run into the grit. And the idea of always being prepared to spit that out is, you know, just kind of like get over it and kind of appreciate that you still have soup at all. At least that's what I take from it. Like, yeah, there's grit in it, but at least, you know, there's still something.
You can spit it out.
So I thought this was a very optimistic piece that doesn't forego acknowledging that there are hardships in life. But it definitely feels like it's on the brighter spectrum. So I really enjoyed it. For me, there was a tone of tenderness to it that I really appreciated. So thank you for the write.
Thank you.
What did you think of Feziana?
I liked it. I love the description of the ice cream as that being like the smooth thing that just eases down your throat. And if only everything was so easy to swallow, like that I think is a wonderful metaphor. Because, you know, sometimes the soup does have the grit. And you're right, it is when we are at our hungriest. It seems like when you're already having a bad day, that's when all the little things go wrong. And it's partly because when you're in a bad mood, everything seems even worse. But, yes, sometimes we get hit when we're down. But I love the optimism here and the description of, like, letting the wind blow in your hair as if you're in the convertible of your dreams, I really like that because, you know, people see wind in different contexts. If you're walking and the wind is hitting you in the face and it feels like, oh, this is an inconvenience. Whereas if you were flying down the highway in a beautiful car, you would think of the wind as something different. So it really, it's about how you take the wind sometimes. And, you know, while I never end up looking like in the movies where they have the wind blowing their hair all beautiful, no, it you know, goes right in my face in a horrible way. But it can still be fun. I really enjoyed that.
End up eating it.
Yes. How is it all in my mouth?
Yeah, no, I agree, Faziana. I really liked the parts that you picked out as well, like with the homemade ice cream and the convertible. There's a real summer tone to it. You know, with roller coasters, it's almost like a theme park or like a Californian boulevard, you know, with the convertibles and the ice cream and the roller coasters. It paints kind of a subtext of a very summery theme. And of course beaches also have sand. So, I don't know, just an observation.
Yeah.
What did you think, Pam?
I really liked this. I have to agree with you, too. It does have definitely have a real nice summer theme to it. And I think that really that ties it together because even though in each stanza there's a different metaphor used, because they all have that connection of summer fun, that you feel like there's kind of a unison, you don't feel like anything's out of balance in this poem. Like it all fits together. I like how that not only does she show us imagery, but there's things that you could almost feel, like, you know, you can feel the ice cream easing its way down your throat. You can feel the grit and the bugs flying into your mouth as you're, you know, riding with that convertible down or riding on that motorcycle or whatever it is, you know, or on that roller coaster. And I thought the roller coaster for life was a good metaphor, the roller coaster of your life, or a good metaphor to end on, because really that's what life is. It's a whole bunch of ups and downs, and sometimes it's simply just waiting in the middle for something to happen. So excellent, right, Lyndon? Very well done.
Thank you. That's a very nice comment. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the piece. It was a lovely piece. Where are we off to next?
We have one by Poetic Picasso, also known as Frank, who I see is on the board with us, but he said he can't call, so I'm going to read it for him. Broken Hourglass.
Doesn't he have a SoundCloud?
Well, you know, I did for another poem, but then he decided to write for... He was going to do Off Topic, and he decided to write... For the grit one, so he changed his poem.
Okay, cool.
Although perhaps we'll do that one later on. We'll see if there's time. Broken Hourglass by Poetic Picasso. I pour the sand from the desert upon the ground as it trickles slowly down like a fountain of gold, reaching the engulfing edges of the sand dunes. Then it fades into a breath of the westerly winds. The softness of the sand blows away into the gust. Within the mass of the clouds of the sandstorm, the forgotten particles lost in the somber shades, a certain nostalgia of the essence of bitter memories. The secret treasure of genies are buried in the sand, the invisible facade of a lingering soul trapped in time, where the silent voices are drowned in surreal echoes when the crescent moon is illuminated by the sun. I can sense the mystifying passage into the past when I observe the shining stars of the vast Milky Way. For I, too, am grit, like the sand I walk upon with my feet, and I shall one day be reduced to the particles that shaped me. From the creation of the kaleidoscopic spectrum, I was born into the womb of the aeons of the cosmos, floating the celestial orbs, blending into gaps of nature, the grit flowing outwardly from the broken hourglass of two glass bulbs of shards. End poem.
Babbler? Is Babbler on mute, or did she drop?
I am on mute. Mute Beats got me. Thank you for the read, Afasiana. That was a great read. I really enjoyed this piece. There was kind of a quiet, like, introspection to this piece as the kind of feeling that I got from it. And just the idea of, you know, pouring sand out as like a metaphor for time and change. And then I liked in the second stanza where it's the softness of the sand. You know, when you think of sand, or at least when I think of sand, I don't really think of soft, you know. You know, for me it's kind of coarse, but I picture like this really fine sand that just kind of blows away and has this kind of transient nature and yet is in the cloud of this sandstorm. So it's like a soft storm. So I really enjoyed the juxtaposition of a soft sand and the clouds of a sandstorm was really interesting to me. And just, you know, the idea of it's almost got like a dust to dust, ashes to ashes kind of motif, you know, to have come from the earth and to come from the sand and to return to it, and that there's just an hourglass that we all leak out of, and it seems like, to me, like a metaphor for, you know, the lifespan that we have, and time passes in a one-way direction throughout our lives. So I really enjoyed this. To me, it felt like a very introspective kind of contemplative piece on the different textures of grit that one might experience in a lifetime. What did you think of it, Lynn?
I loved the my favorite part was the there's an echo. I can hear myself in an echo anyway. Loved this where he brought the theme to light. It's far down the poem. He says, "For I too am the grit, like the sand I walk upon with my feet." I just loved how he worded that. And at the beginning, it sounded really good to say how the sand was moving like a fountain of gold. That was cool. A certain nostalgia of the essence of bitter memories. I liked how he brought in that the element of memories into this poem. It's a very beautiful poem, and I like the short lines. I like the structure of it, too. Enjoyed the poem a lot.
I agree. The structure gave it a really nice, easy flow. And for me, that really lent itself to the kind of contemplative nature that I get from this poem. So I really enjoy kind of the short lines and kind of directs your thoughts and reading of it. What did you think, Pam?
I really enjoyed this. As always, well, Pam did a wonderful read of it. You've got such elegant use of language. I was looking. There are actually sands that are soft, and others such as beaches that have the white, what's called the white sand, because it's the particles are finer. And so, like, that would be, like, in Florida and in other parts of the world. I think Costa Rica was one that was listed. So I think really how you view sand is whether it's soft or not depends on where you live. That really doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the poem, but I just thought it was an interesting tidbit. I really like this all the way through, but especially the secret treasures of Jesus are buried in the sand, the invisible facade, the lingering soul trapped in time. I like that he's brought mythology, that he's brought a kind of a real sense of the magic that can happen in and around sand. I like the use of the kaleidoscopic spectrum. I thought that was a wonderful phrase. I was born into the womb of the eons of the cosmos floating with celestial orbs. There's such a sense of almost a creationism story, mythology, within those ending lines that I just find absolutely wonderful and fascinating and very well done.
I agree. There is something magical and mythological about it, especially with the tie-in of the genie. It gives it a real kind of like mystical desert feel, like almost Arabic in nature that I really enjoyed. Great point, Pam. What did you think of Aphasiana?
I really enjoyed it. I like what all of you have had to say. The description of it as a fountain of gold is really nice because I'm picturing the sand flowing, and it is like a fountain, the way that it shimmers in the sun. I like that it talks about the different textures. I have definitely been in soft sand where it feels so nice to put your feet into it and just have them like be covered with this soft, soft sand. It's a wonderful feeling. And yet, sometimes sand does have the storms. And so I think this works really nicely as a metaphor for the good times and the hard times in life. And like you said, Babbler, the hourglass is our lifespan. We eventually run out of sand, but I really loved the way he handled that part where he said, and I shall one day be reduced to the particles that shaped me. But that is the dust to dust, like you mentioned, and I really like that kind of recognition of like being part of the cycle of life and being made up of all the little grit, just like everything else. I thought it was cool that the kaleidoscope was mentioned because that was our theme last week, or maybe the week before. Mm-hmm. Recently, we had a kaleidoscope theme. I think it was last week. So that was really cool that it's come up again, and the power of the view of the kaleidoscope and how that shapes things. I thought this was very elegant and a great poem. So thank you, Frank, for sharing that with us.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, no, and I did think that too when I read Kaleidoscope. It made me think of last week's theme as well. I noticed that sometimes just even in my own writing, the carryover from like a previous poem inspiration, I guess it just stashes it somewhere in my easily recallable word bank. But I did appreciate it, and I think it worked so well in this piece. All right, where to next?
We have one by Rob Azza. Will you read that one, Abla?
Absolutely. This is The Grain It Leaks by Rob Azza. The grain it leaks all at once, tween these midnight winks and cross-town love affairs. This coat of desperation that widens and cools as bits of hollow wit bend with grains of grit, laughing at the seeds of our confusion. Now rank with delusion, begging for seclusion, their mind boarded from inclusion. With hot loins that gather dust among the traitors and the finks, the liars and their winks, each bludgeoned with waste, with lust, not trust, and skin rough as stone. End poem. Wow, I really like this. There's something obviously gritty. It feels weird to use the word gritty when it's a poem about grit. But and sensual all at once. It's almost like sinfully sensual, like a almost like a kind of taboo pleasure, you know. It's about a rough kind of sensuality and a rough kind of love, I think, where, you know, that the grit of it, the coarseness of it, of the desperate kind of love, or maybe even just lust or just carnal, you know, infatuation, that spins you into, you know, a romance that maybe isn't the best kind of romance. I really kind of enjoyed, because it just, I don't know, there's something very animalistic about it that I think works really well, is that kind of coarse sensuality. You know, it's kind of a brusque, you know, lapping at the seeds of our confusion, now rank with delusion, begging for seclusion, their mind boarded from inclusion. So it's not really about, like, actually connecting emotionally with another person, as it is like a rough kind of physical touch that isn't really healthy. So, it's kind of like the underbelly kind of carnal romance. That's what I got from it. I liked it. I loved the rhyme scheme. I thought it had a really cool rhythm to it with kind of hard end line rhymes that I think the flow worked very well. What did you think, Pam?
I liked this. I actually found it rather dark and horrifying. Because to me, when I read The Grain, it leaks all at once. Well, growing up around near farm countries, you know, areas, I just think of those really tall silos that they store the grain in, and how individual grain of wheat is light. It's nothing to it. But could you imagine an entire silo filled with grain just opening up and it all pouring on you at once? You would freaking drown. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And you know, it immediately starts off with a really dark tone, and it takes a dark tone, and there's a sense of struggle to it, and a sense of, as you said, animalism. But the coat of desperation that widens and cools with bits of hollow wood bend with grains of grit. To me, this feels like a fight that can't be won. And then amongst the traitors and the finks, the liars and their winks, it's like all these people that you expect to help you are leaving you buried. I know it doesn't quite fit with the topic, but that's just what I personally feel and get from the write. But as always, Rob Az's poetry really impresses me, and it's very well done.
I really like that interpretation, Pam. I think that's an excellent interpretation. Yeah, just the cold-shoulderedness of it, you know, the hardness just of relationships in general, you know, the desperation of even just trying to make a connection, romantic or not. I really like your interpretation of this, and I agree. I think maybe that's a better interpretation than the one I had. So thank you. I love hearing other people's perspectives. what did
That's
you think,
one of the
Adriana?
Wonderful things about poetry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I love hearing what other people think. I also like hearing, when I can, like what the author thinks, too. You know, that's always interesting, too, when you know, the sharing. I enjoy the sharing. That's why I'm here.
I agree, even when I'm proven wrong.
Yes.
I liked the coat of desperation because I was picturing, like, there's something about, like, prostitutes or, like, people who are trying to pick up wearing, like, so much makeup that it becomes, like, gritty. It's like the mascara that is chunky and the that layer on top of your skin. And there's something, the way that it's talking about lust, like it's a like it's a bad and dangerous thing in this case. Having that code of desperation, I was just picturing like when the makeup is very chunky. But I also think of that thing where when you're about to sell a house, you suddenly like do all those projects that you were not doing for yourself, but like throwing that layer of paint on that last coat just to hurry up and sell it. And there's something about that coat of desperation where, and if you're doing it in a rush, there may be that little grit in there, and that it's like a bit of a lie because the house is suddenly like staged to look different than maybe it is below the surface. There's something gritty about that. I liked the liars and their winks, each bludgeoned with waste. There's something about the way that liars make those the kind of deals. I'm like picturing the exaggerated wink of like a cartoon character when they're about to do something fishy. And I like the way that that's put together. The really short lines in this also helped it flow, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I also got the picture of, like, you know, that really cheesy wink, you know, the car salesman-y BS, like, hey, you know, like, ridiculous wink. And I think that worked really well then with the following word, you know, bludgeoned, because it's just like the beat you over the head insincerity of it. So I thought that worked really well as a word combination. I'm glad you pointed that line out. What did you think, Lynn?
I thought it was a great economy of words. His lines are short, but there it's also like a short poem. It's rich with rhymes. That was very, very enjoyable. And I thought it was a great balance of subtlety and vividness at the same time. And I thought the narration was really special. It seemed like it was like an overview from way up high that the person, the narrator, is not like involved in it. He's just seeing it from afar. I thought that was a really well-crafted poem. It was awesome. I think it's the first time I read one of his.
I really like what you're saying about the perspective of the narrator. I think that's a great point. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's involved. I guess when I was reading it, almost I heard in my perspective is like someone reflecting on something that happened, but still happens, but maybe they've had experience with it in the past. You know, like someone informing you on. You know, the gritty
it's an
underbelly.
Observer, right?
Yeah. So,
it's an observer. It's not something that happened to him. It was just something around him.
Yeah, no, I was just explaining how I was seeing it. But, yeah, no, I think that's accurate as well. What's next?
Now we have one by Collap, and I was thinking maybe Pam could read this one.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. This is The Gritting Fact by Collap, and it goes like this. Is chivalry a genre word? Can a woman stick to something grinning and bearing, gritting her teeth as in the process of delivery, part and parcel of her nature, her DNA to withstand the long haul? Though she may be squeamish at the sight of a rodent scurrying around her house, indoors or out. Some can point their finger, calling her hysterical, just because she lets out, even those with deep voices, a high-pitched sound of anger or fear. Judge not those who stick through thick or thin, tumbling through a toxic thing called interdependence, and not so much inter as dependence. For it's all in the who's dependence on who, much like where does reality and justice lie among the palette of colors from zero to infinity. She may seem to be the chink in his armor that has been lost, has lost, long lost its sheen, though without the chink she you wouldn't be able to move this fallen knight. With no cause, no ardor, for he lost his banner, nor compunction, to save any damsel in distress, least of all his own. He might even be standing there mocking after he's knocked her down, for it takes grit to weather vagaries of a temperament that is not anchored in a solid values and personal conviction that swings at the slightest change in elements and weather vanes searching for quietude. She may seem the victim martyrized, but her perpetrator ignored. By her perpetrator, nor does she seek honor or recognition. She does what she has to do as such. She does what she has to do, and as much as a rudder is built to stabilize vertically the very thing it holds, though a brighter perspective is tempting, she knows that for now she'll keep the boat steady, steered in the right direction against the odds, the demons that inhabit his soul. Her shoulders are broad enough to carry the baggage for the both of them, and rare moments when the blade of lucidity cuts through the thick muck of coat, when his consciousness pricks him with the realization that it's perhaps her that's holding the fort, the seams and chinks of a rusty sinking ship. End poem. I'm sorry.
Babbler, I think you might be muted again.
Yes, I was. I was hunting for my mute button. Sometimes my phone doesn't like me to let me find it. Thank you for the read, Pam. I really enjoyed this piece. It's painful, you know. It speaks of not just necessarily the abuse of women, although it is hinted at here as well, where it's talked about, like, maybe he's even mocking her or knocking her down, so much as it is the lack of acknowledgement and neglect of the role of women in keeping things running and keeping things together without acknowledgement or support, and just grinning it and bearing it, and the grit that is needed to tolerate and handle that kind of lifestyle, especially over long periods of time. I was especially struck by the stanza where it says her shoulders are broad enough to carry the baggage for both of them, and in rare moments when a blade of lucidity cuts through the thick muck of coat, when his consciousness pricks him with the realization that is perhaps her that's holding the fort, the seams and chinks of a rusty sinking ship. You know, that's the rarity. The rarity is the acknowledgement. The rarity is the realization. And there is a lot of grit involved with that, and a lot of pain, you know, just the being worn down. Even the early mention, you know, in the beginning, about the comparison or about childbirth, you know, gritting her teeth as in the process of delivery. I feel like, at least in my experience, I have a lot of female friends who have found themselves exactly in these types of situations where it's just really more about the lack of acknowledgement and the lack of support, where they end up doing, you know, the majority of the housework and the majority of the household chores and the child rearing and all of the things that make a home run smoothly, in addition to their own job, with very little acknowledgement. And I think this speaks well to it. In a very painful kind of way. I really enjoy the tone that this poem is written with. I think it was a very fantastic write by Colab. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really like this. I do like how it has a message of how too often we misjudge a person. You know, we think that because, you know, somebody might squeal when they see a mouse run across the floor, they can't handle the big things. But so often in life, when you're busy shouldering all these big things, when you're busy shouldering an abusive relationship or an unsupportive partner or you know, anything that takes emotional and physical strength, sometimes, you know, the little things are what becomes almost overwhelming. She's really just got a strong voice and helps you to see things in a new way. And I really like how there's kind of that thought, that philosophy of, you know, like this knight can't move. He can't do anything that he's supposed to do if he doesn't have the chinks in the armor, if he doesn't have the ability for the armor to bend, he is useless. I just think it's a wonderful thought-provoking write and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. I think you bring up some good points, you know, especially the line about that armor and, you know, the stiff rigidity if you don't build in joints or places for it to swing. Also, like, about the small things being, you know, basically the straw that broke the camel's back kind of a deal. You might freak out over a mouse, but that doesn't make you weak. You know, everybody has specific fears, but that doesn't mean you're not capable of other things. You know, the grand scheme of things, being afraid of mice doesn't make you a terrible partner in life. I'm sure other people are afraid of other things. So I just thought that was a really good point to make. What did you think of Faziana?
I really liked that section about the armor as well. I think that that's really a great metaphor that, like, even if she seems like she might be the weakness, sometimes that flexibility is what's needed. And I think that could work, you know, in a relationship level too. It's like maybe she creates a softer side of him, and maybe that's his best side. I really liked the part that said, "Judge not those who stick through thick or thin, tumbling through a toxic thing called interdependence, not so much inter as dependence." I like the way that she broke down that word and recognized the toxic situation, but also that it's difficult to tumble through that and to manage to hold things together the way that women often do. To do all of this and not be recognized, even when their partner does do their share, there tends to be the mental load of, like, having to be the one to organize it and make sure that it happens. Now, I'm actually fortunate that my partner tends to be the person who does that. I'm the horrible one. But I know that a lot of women get stuck with the brunt of things. And I think Collab gives them a voice. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I too am lucky. My husband does the vast majority of the household tasks, which sometimes I feel bad about, but I work so much. My job is a time suck for sure, and it saps, like, all of my executive function. I get home and I just don't care about anything. So I am very fortunate in to have a super supportive partner, but that is the unusual situation, unfortunately. So I am in that same boat. Where are we off to next?
I believe we have a SoundCloud for Eric Svensson.
All right,
let me go check. I'm sure we do. And
Is it titled I Survived?
No, it's Play On. Play On.
Play On. I don't see one titled Play On.
Okay. We'll just read it in that case. Whose turn is it to read? I think it's me now. Play On by Eric Svensson. Grit like vinyl record grooves, loyal like his master's voice hound, bound by duty to the gramophone, gritty guts of seven singles, jukebox inserted coin, drops a chosen track like weathered shingles, leather-clad rock star grinds hip bone, grit, and grip of hands upon a guitar, twang, strum, pluck strings, grainy photograph, grit, knits composition, rose-tinted view removed, Vietnamese children flee napalm bombs, gargoyle's grimace of acid rain devours. Will our names be writ in water? Tango twisters, volatile hurricanes, admirable grit of the human species, survival against mighty odds. Impregnate the cloud, hashtag groovy millennials, goosed boss spunk, tenacious grit, sandpaper away daily doubt splinters. Play on, be his master's voice, bound by duty, record your life's unique vinyl. End poem.
Great read, Afasiana. I enjoyed this. There was something very kind of 50s rock about it at the beginning. You know, with the vinyl records, loyal like his master's voice hound, bound by duty to the gramophone. You know, just listening to the tunes and the rock stars and the vibe of an era is what it feels like. And then when the rose-tinted view is removed, you suddenly see Vietnamese children fleeing napalm bombs, you know, like just it becomes like a harder and rougher reality, you know. Instead of just like this dog listening to music, it's suddenly the uglier flip side of the world, you know, with hurricanes and survival and acid rain. But then it ends on kind of a happier note, you know, be his master's voice, you know, be the calming voice to the dog and record your life's unique vinyl, you know, feels like write the story of your life, like write the song that you want to hear. You know, you decide what the record gets to play. So I found this a wonderful, like, mix of kind of dark and more lighthearted, and it ends on kind of an optimistic note that I enjoy. That's how I think, anyway. You know, hearing both sides of reality and then choosing how to move forward. What did you think, Afasiana?
I really love your interpretation of that. I do see both sides in here. There's definitely the darkness, like the napalm bombs, but a lot of darkness here. But it also does have that kind of feeling of you can choose the tune of your life, and you're able to pick up the things that you want to do. A lot of darkness, but yet there is that hopefulness. I think you're right. My favorite line was, sandpaper away daily doubt splinters. Something about, like, wiping away that grit. With the grit of sandpaper, dealing with the grit of doubt that is splintered within you, and finding your way to your path through that grit. I just loved that line and how it worked, it using grit in multiple ways.
Yeah, that was, you know, one of, I think, the more, like, optimistic lines in here, the sandpapering away daily doubt splinters, you know. And the fact that it's daily and that you need tenacious grit to do it is also, like, you know, you need to be persistent because negative things are going to pop up every day. Problems are going to pop up every day, you know, and it takes determination to fix them, you know, even just there's like, you know, sandpapering away the doubt, but then there's also fixing the problem. I think that was a great line of this piece. It reads so well. Pam, what did you think?
I really liked this one too. And I did have the feel of both the negative and positive side of grit. And I did like how it was about a daily thing, but it's like, it went from one extreme to another. It was, you know, something as simple as the everyday, or even how I went into like the dramatics of the leather clad rock star grinds at bones, grit and grip of hands upon guitar. You know, like if you're going to learn a musical instrument, you have to persist every day. And it did also that extremely horrifying and dark imagery of Vietnamese children feeding napalm bombs. You know, tenacious grip sandpaper away daily doubt splinter. I like the idea that by daily using your tenacious grit, that the doubts will splinter, that you will become a stronger person emotionally and mentally. Just an excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's a good observation too. There, it is multifaceted use of the word grit. You know, the daily, you know, the grit it takes to get through the daily stuff, and then the grit it takes to get through like the really hard stuff. So, great observation, Pam. Where to now?
Now, why don't you read the one by Daniel Deschino?
Great. This is The Salvation of Frailty by Daniel Deschino. Of the frailty that the gesture of time does bring, a golem of rock, water, sky, and earth, conjured by a spell of passion and fire. What rock does not crumble from a drop of rain? What water does not fade from a gentle breeze? And what air is not powerless without the fiery dance of earth, an earth that is the beginning and the end, the kind mother and the grim reaper. With brittle bones and calloused feet, I dance to every sound I hear, with tainted blood and poisoned mind. I long to taste the fruits of life. O joyous path each day does bring, I trudge full on till blackened night. End poem. This was a really interesting piece in my mind. You know, it talks about the slow wearing down, you know, of all of the elements of a golem, you know, of everything slowly gives way to the wear of time and living and grit. I particularly was drawn to the line of an earth that is the beginning and the end, the kind mother and the grim reaper. You know, it's all one and the same. It kind of gets at like that, the continuity of life, like of beginnings and ends and the circles of it. You know, and then of course the ending, you know, with brittle bones and calloused feet, you know, a life lived, you know, to long for life again, but also trudge into the blackened night, you know, complete your own circle and move on with fortitude. I thought this was a really interesting piece, and I enjoyed a lot of the imagery and a lot of the elemental and almost magical feel of it, while still connecting to, you know, something that feels a little more relatable, you know, just the act of aging, both landscape and lifetime. I thought this was a really nice piece. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really liked this, and I thought it was interesting, really cool the way he added kind of a sense of mythology. It seems to me to be a poem about aging and how we have to kind of find a new sense of grit. The older the body gets, and the older the mind gets. The opening line of the frailty that the gesture of time does bring, the idea that time is playing a cruel joke on us, that near the end of life we become nearly, if not equally, as helpless as we were at the beginning of life. I also liked the imagery that he used of being a golem, you know, that something that's controlled by somebody else's will. And also that, like you pointed out, that with an earth that is the beginning and the end, the kind mother and the grim reaper, you know, and life is like that, and you know it's another one that has that whole message of that there will be good times and there will be bad times. I really like the positive note that the last stanza has, the idea that even though the bones are brittle and the feet are callous, you still dance. Just positive and uplifting in that last stanza, and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. It is a little bit more uplifting feeling. It feels almost like dancing and celebrating the life lived, but also just kind of in the face of death, you know. Still got it in me kind of a thing, which I really enjoyed, I thought. And I thought it tied well, too, back into the beginning, you know, the word gesture, you know. What did you think, Susanna?
I really enjoyed it. And I agreed with Pam, especially about that line of dancing. I dance to every sound I hear. So, like, despite the fact that the bones are starting to feel brittle, the feet are calloused, tired, there's something about still dancing at every sound. That makes me think of, like, you know, when you hear the birds and it brings you alive, and there's music in the streets, and there's, like, to be excited about all the little things that you hear, even when you're worn out, even when it's said, a little bit after that, that the blood is tainted, that his mind has been poisoned, but there's still that optimism of the dance, and oh, joyous path each day. So, it's been hard, and the overall journey is a trudge sometimes. There is a joyous path each day. I, too, liked the golem kind of mythological feel to things. And I loved that all of the elements were included. You know, there's the rock and the water and the air and the fire. There's something about having all the elements in there that feels mystical and yet grounding. Like you pointed out, Babbler, having the mother and the Grim Reaper together shows that full cycle, and the grit of living through it all. I really enjoyed this piece.
Yeah, I agree. It feels very circular to me. You know, like just begin. It's about beginnings and ends, and you know, getting through it with as much joy and grace as you can muster. I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was a great write. Where are we going to next?
Next, I'm going to have Pam read hers.
All right. I almost said up next. It's like, yeah, that's not your job tonight, Pam. All right. So, this is Buried Cobblestone Rising, and it goes like this. Rough edges of impurities mandated grit, put the sharp shine upon the axe, a slow, steady spinning of time, eclipsing, coronation of opinions no longer given consideration, sandstorm constellations of thought moving in an anemic universe beyond the slippery grip of selfish pride nailed to midnight crossroads, where ghosts hang themselves upon buried cobblestone, rising to meet the turn in the road. End poem.
Excellent read, Pam. I really enjoyed your use of language in this. There's just something about the words that you chose and how they flow together. I enjoy the sound of, I don't know how to describe it. Like, even as a kid, I was weird. I would write little lists that I would tuck away with words that I liked to say. I don't like, does that, I don't know if anyone else ever did that, or if I was just a weird kid. But I did make little notes of, like, words that I liked the sound of. You know, like one of my favorite words to say is smoke. There's just something about the word smoke that I find so satisfying. And I get that same kind of sensation when I read this piece, which really brings another level of enjoyment to it for me. I really enjoyed, you know, hearing and kind of forming with my mouth, you know, the idea, mandated grit to put the sharp shine upon the axe. You know, it takes roughness to get that sharp shine. But just the way the words flow out of my mouth, I enjoy. I don't know how else to say that. coronation of opinion, no longer given consideration. It gets to that point where it's just like not giving really a rat's ass about opinions. You know, like this is where it is. This is the choice and the independence of that as a concept. So I enjoy how all these little stanzas, even though they're really quite small, kind of are their own thought in themselves and guide me along this story of the use of grit to what feels for me is like a formation of self, like a becoming of self, and kind of building up an ego and then having it knocked down. To then rise up again. So I really enjoyed this. To me it is like the building of an ego and then the knocking down of said ego. I also really enjoyed the concept of an anemic universe. It kind of reminds me a little bit of a thing I kind of used to say snidely as a mouthy teenager that I once was. My mom would always say, like, patience is a virtue, and I would be like, why can't hurry the hell up be a virtue? I was kind of a funny kid. Like, why can't hurry the hell up be a virtue? Like, come on. But that's kind of what I think of when I read Anemic Universe. You know, in the grand scheme of things take so long on a universal scale, but they happen so quickly comparatively in a lifetime, even in those lifetimes it feels like just a moment. So I really enjoy the complexity of this piece, Pam. I think this is an excellent, excellent write. So thank you.
Thank you.
What did you think of Faziana?
I agree with you that I really love the word choices and phrasing. Although I have to say, Babbler, I think it's adorable that you used to write down words that you like the sound of. That's so cute. I always did that with names because I was sure that I was going to need names either because I was going to have lots of children, which I didn't, or that I was going to write lots of stories and I would need character names. So I would always keep track of, like, if someone had a cool name, I would write that down. But I love the idea of you going around, like, lit sounds, like words that sound cool and writing it down. It's a writer thing, I suppose. It's a little notebook of things to think about. But I'm just picturing you as a small child doing this. I really, really liked coronation of opinions, no longer given consideration. So, like, the coronation is like you're crowning an opinion as the king. It's the right thing, except it's no longer really paid attention to. So there is that buildup of the ego and then the knocking it down, like Babbler was saying. I liked the anemic universe thing, too. That was a creative thought that worked out really nicely. And sandstorm constellations of thought. So that has two kind of opposing images that I love combining. Constellations have defined shapes. They are individual stars, but they, because of the arrangement, form something. So to have a constellation of thought is to have something that's a picture. It's making something. Whereas a sandstorm is all over the place. It's inconsistent. It's blowing out of control. Those grains, unlike the stars, are not fixed. They're all over the place. So to have a sandstorm of constellations is just a fascinating concept to me. And it kind of shows how, you know, you can have a brainstorm where your thoughts are all over the place, and yet it ends up forming that constellation. I don't know, I got stuck on that stanza because I just was fascinated by the combination of the sandstorm and the constellation.
Well, thank you. And thank you to both of you for the inspiration. I have to tell you, you two with your little quirks when you were little, I was just as odd. My obsession, though, was commercials. For some reason, when I was a kid, I was convinced that I was going to go into the business of advertising. So I was constantly writing commercials and jingles for everything in the house. And my poor younger sister, every time she got on the toilet, because I knew she couldn't move, and for some reason she wouldn't lock the bathroom door, and I would come in, and while she was sitting on the toilet, I would perform commercials and jingles.
Oh, I love that, Pam. Mm-hmm.
I was an entertainer as well as a child. I would go up and down restaurant aisles and dance and sing. My favorite was Mack the Knife. And I would ask people what they were eating and if it was any good and if I could have a bite. And my parents were very, very embarrassed all the time. I picture
That's
myself
so
almost
awesome.
As like, you know, like, so I watched like these old movies as a kid where you had like the lounge singers, you know, where you would walk up and down the tables. And so in my head, that's what I was doing. And so that's why I would sing stuff like Fever and Mac the Knife to like these complete strangers and then ask them if they were having a good night and if their food was tasty.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. My brother used to pretend he had a talk show on the bus to school because there was this camera, and it was actually a fake camera, it turned out, that was supposed to be like a security thing on the bus. And he would pick the seat that was in the best view of the camera, and he would talk to it the whole time. And he'd be like, today on the way to school, this happened. And then he'll just, like, interview the different kids on the bus. And, like, he always has some, like, ridiculous story that he had to say from the day before. This happened. And he's, like, coming to you from, like, I don't know. He had, like, this name of a show. I can't remember now. But he thought he was a talk show host. And he was sure that the principal watched these tapes of the buses and was going to find this hilarious. He was so disappointed when we later found out that, the, you know, no one was watching him.
Oh, my goodness.
It was so cute.
Too funny.
But, Pam, those commercials, that is awesome. Actually, I took marketing in university, and mostly we talked about, like, guerrilla marketing and, like, advertising in ways other than commercials, but we also spent a lot of time analyzing commercials, and I would have loved to analyze the stuff that you came up with.
I'm pretty sure it wasn't that good, but yeah. I know you know, like, yeah, commercials, they do. They use so much psychology to sell things. Like it's actually amazing. I remember learning before about how much do they use sexuality, even in like subtle ways, to sell things. Like there was this advertisement for Tabasco sauce where the Tabasco bottle was dripping into a split baked potato, and it was like a video we were watching in a high school class, and they were talking about, you know, obviously that what the part that the Tabasco sauce represented and the part the potato represented, and it was like, oh my God, that potato's a vagina. And then the realizing that was like, jeez. And then you start looking for other advertisements, like, what are they hiding here?
I'm trying to remember what commercial it is that I saw on my road trip, because I don't watch TV, but I did put TV on for the dogs while we were on our road trip, and they have the most, like, over-sexualized ad out for a chicken sandwich that is just ridiculous. And I'm like, wow.
Oh, they do. They really do.
Okay, then. Chicken sandwich. A little too into it.
But you remembered it.
Well, because I was just weird. I didn't remember it well enough to remember who the hell is selling the sandwich.
True, so they failed in that sense.
The weird sexy chicken ad, that's all I got out of it.
It's in your subliminal mind now, though. At some point, you're going to see, like, a package, and you're going to be like, why do I want this so much?
My guess would be it's not the chicken place that's not open on Sundays. I forget what they are, but, you know, the
Chick-fil-A.
Big Chick-fil-A. Yeah, my guess would be it was not a Chick-fil-A commercial.
Almost certainly not, no. Definitely not. No.
All right, well, both of you have to come up with ads for us now for our show. Okay, so I'm going to do mine. Quarry or Masonry by Faziana. Chiseled by adversity, a monumental mess took shape. Layers of sediment holding sentiment. No diamonds in this rough. A solid foundation is enough. Slivers of stone, not to my detriment. Grit embedded in ventricles that reshape hard-hitting sensuality. Grit lodged in gray matter. Stubborn as stone, masterpieces in thought's splatter, determination, solid as bone. Took shards of identities lost, sharp silica of a battered woman, alumna, illumina, the snobby scholar, lascivious lime, lost little lady, idealistic iron oxide, innocence interrupted, maniacal magnesia, melancholy inspired mischief. The bricks are not smooth, but following the recipe builds a warrior who will grit her teeth no matter the challenge. And poem.
Great read. I really enjoy your use of alliteration in this piece, you know, and creative use, you know, like alumna, illumina. You know, you don't hear either one of those words in any kind of great frequency in poetry, but they work so well next to each other. So I thought this had a really great rhythm to it, and I enjoyed the rhyme in it as well. The message is also really good, you know, to have gone through something hard, and have it shape you, but not in a negative way, you know, to use that grit to make the building blocks of warrior, to take the adversity and make it into a strength. I think there's a really strong message here. And I just enjoyed the strong language in it. Throughout the poem, there's always a message and always a tone of like a solidness, of a strength, of a certainty, a fortitude to it that I think works really well. you know, to dig in your heels and refuse to fall. It's what I get from this. I thought it was a really strong piece, and it was a piece about empowerment. I really liked that about it. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really liked this one. You know, it's a great, right, about growth and personal strength and that grit and determination. But it's also a wonderful write about just accepting yourself. No matter how many different changes you go through in life, and even if you become a person that you didn't see yourself becoming, you know, in your youth, you know, you just kind of, it's a matter of having the tenacity to go with the flow and to learn to love and accept your new self. And I really like the imagery at the end, the idea that the bricks are not smooth, but following the recipe builds a warrior who will grit her teeth no matter the challenge. I think that is such a strong ending. And I also liked a solid foundation and enough shoulders of stone, not to my detriment, grit embedded in ventricle that reshape hard-hitting sensuality. I like that you put the terms hard-hitting and sensuality together. You know, the idea that, you know, grit and sensuality can be mixed together, and the masterpieces and thoughts splatter, determination solid as bone. I really like the imagery of a bone as a metaphor, like almost as if your determination is the skeleton that holds you together. So, excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, both of you.
I think it's a really strong piece of Asiana. I love the positivity to it. I feel like it has grit even in its tone. So, well done.
Thanks.
Where are we off to next?
There's one by Gerald E. Green that I got the audio late for that one. So, Pam, I'm a little bit doubtful that it's there, but can you check if it is?
His is there, yes. And I'll go ahead and push play.
Thank you.
Grit, written and read by Gerald Green. It might be simple, might have too much rhyme, or maybe lengthy, droning on about minutia. Even if you give a whit, to read my poetry reveals grit. Sometimes the form is difficult to know, because each verse is just a tad or bit unlike the others. In which case, take note, to read my poetry reveals grit. I never win a contest, never get a prize. I'm hesitating to admit the lack of readership and fans, because to read my poetry reveals grit. My metaphors are clumsy, seldom clear. My metaphors are clumsy, seldom clear, like eating juicy peaches with a pit, without a napkin or a paper towel. To read my poetry reveals grit. This is a test to see how far you've come. If you're still reading this or if you've quit, you are forgiven just because I know to read my poetry reveals grit. End poem.
Wow, that was a really great piece. I enjoyed it. It's got kind of a dark, kind of self-depreciating humor to it. I also really appreciate the SoundCloud. I thought this piece was particularly effective in his voice. So I'm very glad that he made a SoundCloud for it. I appreciate that. You know, this has a really strong rhythm to it. I see now that in the footnote here it says that it is in iambic pentameter, in something called neo-formalist poetry, which I'm not familiar with, but it makes me want to go look. you know, the fact that it's self-depreciating, you know, like I write this poem because basically I love writing poetry, so that's why I write it. and maybe it's an unusual, you know, rhyme scheme, or maybe it's a difficult form, or everything's a little hard, and maybe people will stop reading it. But it makes him more appreciative of people who finish, because the work that he put into it, and that it takes a little bit of something to get to the end of his poem. I maybe don't agree so much, because I personally found this poem rather enjoyable, and I like pieces with humor in it, which this has. I don't really, in this piece anyway, see anything that has a clumsy metaphor that's difficult to understand or anything like that, but I do enjoy the humor in it, and I enjoy the meter of it, and then I like the rhyme. I think it's a fun and easy read that has just a little bit of self-depreciating bite to it. So I particularly enjoyed this piece. So I thank him for his write. What did you think, Pam?
I really enjoyed this. Neo-formalism, it was just that, you know, was a late 20th century development in American poetry that sought to draw fresh attention to traditional forms of verse in terms of meter, rhyme, and stanzaic symmetry, because they were disheartened by the overwhelming popularity of free verse. And obviously, yes, I'm reading that off the page. I do not have that kind of brain that memorized. But, you know, I do like the self-deprecating humor. And I would have to say that, in all honesty, that I don't believe Gerald believes that. I think this is more almost like a character type, right? Because if you look at his page and how many medals he's won and how many front page picks he's had,
right?
You know, it's quite obvious. But it does have a nice little bite to it. And I like that he decided to write about writing poetry. And I especially like the humor in the ending line. You know, if you got to this point and you quit, I completely understand, you know. And I think there are some people who write such long poems, they should have that as a disclaimer. Like right in the middle of their poem, if you got to this point and quit, I understand. So this is really great, though. And he does do the rhyme. Does this one rhyme? It does rhyme. Okay. Sometimes especially the rhyme is done really well, you don't necessarily catch on to it right away. But, yeah, I admire people who pull off meter well. I always say I do accidental meter. Like, people be like, oh, you write really good meter. Complete accident. Wasn't planned. So when somebody has this kind of ability, it's to me very admirable. And I really enjoyed this poem and the reading of it.
Yeah, I think it really takes some skill to write in meter and not hogtie your sometimes. Sometimes it comes out so easy, you know, and I'm like, wow, I metered and rhymed that so easily and it just flowed out. I can't believe it. But like 95% of the time, I'm like, if I'm trying to make something rhyme or have a good meter to it, like be in something as specific as iambic pentameter, I feel like I'm trying to stuff my message into this form, and it just isn't, it's really crippling to the message. So I really appreciate it when I read something and it is in a form that's really strict like that, but I don't feel like the message was lost in it. So I think this works very well, and I think it works well with the humor. I don't feel like there's a loss here. So I feel like that takes a particular kind of skill. So that's an excellent point, Pam. Feziana, what did you think?
I agree that it takes a lot of skill to be able to write an iambic pentameter and still make it feel natural. Like this had that self-depreciating humor. It had such like a natural feel to it. It did not seem like someone was trying to squeeze certain amount of words in there. So, whenever I try to do iambic pentameter, which I'm awful at, it ends up being so forced and awkward and, like, doesn't say what I want it to say, really. So I completely understand with what you were saying, and I'm in awe of people like Gerald who can do this, who can make it work both in form and in message. I liked when he said that his metaphors were like eating juicy peaches with a pit. You know, still has the pit in there. Makes me think of grapes that have the seeds too. It's like it's good, and then you bite into it, and there's that grit in the middle. I really, really liked his sense of humor. I liked that he talked about droning on about minutiae. I love the word minutiae, and it's not used super often, so I like that he included that. This was very well done.
Yeah, I agree. I love the interesting word choices. Minutiae brings me back just to that thought of, like, me and my little sketch pad. I can just see me writing something like that. That's the exact kind of weird stuff I did as a kid. Where are we off to next, Ephesiana?
So that was the end of the ones for the contests. But I do have one here by Suicide Suspect, and it's actually a rap. So it's a poem that he turned into music. And I guess it was on a different show. I was talking recently about how there have been some kind of tragedies uncovered in my area regarding the residential schools, which took Indigenous children. And there was recently found 215 who had passed away at the school. And I was talking to Suicide about this, and I asked him how he felt about it. He's like, well, have you read my poem, I Survived? And I looked at it, and it's from before all of this, but obviously it's been an ongoing issue. So anyway, I was thinking about this that he wrote a while ago, and we have a SoundCloud for it. It's called I Survived.
All right, well, this should be awesome to listen to. So here we go.
He should be fucking dead, man.
I know, he was lucky.
No, that shit wasn't love.
Yeah, man.
This was divine intervention. You know what divine intervention is?
I think so.
Aha! They like to look me in the eye and be like, dude, what the fuck is wrong with you? I stare right through them like, with me, I'm just a product of my environment. A runaway child singing songs to the sirens. My affections were nurtured by emotional murder and violence. You could tell I was defiled by the tears that's running wild with each and every time that I was smiling. Scars tell legends if a death is there for all to see them. With the amount of times I died inside my body's a mausoleum. But I'll stop you breathing when I'm reaching even farther, deeper, darker, like a shark in the water when your body's bleeding. The very scary aura of Mazzoro caused the reason all the leaves are falling to the bottom, deep in the autumn season. Time to call the freaks in, grinding on the weekend. Rhyme with all the heathens, dropping lines to rock your mind to pieces. Exploding like a stick of dynamite, the kind of fetus with a smile beneath the sliding violence to the peace. Bitch, doing time in the asylum got me digging over finding bones I used to slowly find my teeth with. Bench holding deep dish, crawling up. Alcoholic really sinks with the fishes, your bitches put me in the V-fib. I'm all too eager to greet it with the meat cleaving, a bitch feeding the meat in my secret. See how she eats it to set.
Even when I'm high in the sky,
now I'm grounded.
Even when I'm right in the tide,
I'm drowning.
Even when I'm
dry my eyes, and I'm clowning.
Even when I'm
driving
to die,
I'm not allowed in. A child taken from their own, I survived. The pigs invading my home, I survived. Raised and sprayed in the lawn, I survived. And I was brave to the bone,
I survived.
Rock by all the trials and the tribulations. All the wild problems, child wishes with the races. Awful smile and hostile, stop by limitations. In the small box, like smallpox to kill a nation. Pop, pop, the body's right, we shot him in the face with some automatic spray shit to keep the picture faceless. Indigenous and nameless. You can see the racism blatantly placed within the hatred statements. Teaching immigrants 100 different races, to unequivocally treat us differently 100 different ways. Onset invasion, disease evisceration, starvation, 100 murder, missing women cases. Then you sit and wonder why fucking kids are abrasive. 2% the population, 30% the prison cases. Then you sit and wonder why you fucking pigs are hated. Covered another mass grave and native children in the basement.
When I'm high in the sky,
now I'm grounded.
Even when I'm riding the tide,
I'm drowning.
Even when I'm drying my eyes,
I'm clowning.
Even when I'm striving to die,
I'm not allowed in. Another rape by pre, we survived. Another stray in the street, we survived. Face to face with police, we survived. Now we pray for the peace, we survived it. Come from the slums of the underbelly, underwelly. What we're trying to save is raping us, no wonder they undersell me. And I'll never let another stupid motherfucker tell me. Be surrounded by 1,000 cops with gun heavy is non-deadly. When the army and RCMP are at a peaceful protest, every officer ready. All these impersonating officers of the law, pretending like they haven't ruined lives. Every option given was how we choose to die. My cousin was thrown off an 8-story building. It wasn't even an investigation to call. Call it suicide. So we gasp and send our saddest prayers. Casket buried, laugh and stare. You act as if we had to bear it. The activists react to fairness as you sit and set your rabbit snares. Living lavish as my people are mad as shit. The other half are scared. 16-year-old native girl was shot and killed by police today. What the fuck happened there?
Even when I'm high in the sky,
now I'm grounded.
Even when I'm riding in the tide,
now I'm drowning.
Even when
I'm drying my eyes and I'm clowning.
Even when I'm striving to die,
I'm not allowed in.
Body's thrown in the mud,
we survived. A woman raped, soaked in blood,
we survived.
My homie thrown a couple slugs,
yo, we died.
Overdosing on the drugs,
I survived it.
Wow, that was a really, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there, you know, just about the treatment of minorities. And there's, you know, just the anger. You know, that's one thing about rap, I think, is it really helps to express those kind of strong feelings, especially, in my opinion, pain comes out really well in rap. But there was a lot of really horrific things done to Native Americans in this country. Just earlier today, this is a little bit tangential, but just earlier today at work, I work with a lot of people that are Indian or Pakistani, and they were talking today about India and Pakistan and about the division of the countries and the land, and they were arguing about whether or not the land that India gave Pakistan essentially was equitable. And it's like, well, it really kind of depends on your definition of equitable. I mean, if you're going by land mass or if you're going by like the usefulness of the land, you know, and it's just made me think of like all the different ways that you can unfairly treat someone, even if you think in some ways you're being fair, just because there's different perspectives and measurements, and the way that racism kind of gets built into those things and those systems. You know, and this piece, you know, dealing with just the traumatic and stark reality of a person's experience and a people's experience and just managing to survive and just the strength that it takes to do that. I found this is a really kind of powerful and kind of gut-punching piece. Athesiana, you're kind of sharing it with us. What did you think about it?
I think gut punching is a good way to say it. There are several places in this where it talks about things that hit really hard. And like you say, a person's experience and also a people's experience. And I think a lot of the stuff that he's gone through, as expressed in his poetry and raps, represents greater issues that have influenced a lot of people. I think it's really powerful, and you definitely do feel his anger, but also his pain. Referencing the horrors that have happened to him and to others, and but I respect the I survived, like the recognizing that despite all that's happened, he has managed to get through it, and his people have managed to get through it. There's a quote at the top it's something that he's kind of like responding to. It said, the goal of the residential school, we instill in them the pronounced distaste for native life so that they will be humiliated when reminded of their origin. When they graduate from our institution, the children have lost everything native against their blood. And so he's saying that he survived not only physically, but that he survived that concept, and that he still has maintained his culture and survived the attempted elimination of it. I have a lot of respect for how he puts it all out there, and I think that his writing is very relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, you know, these things are sometimes hard to express because you never know what another person's reaction is going to be. And when you put something super personal out there, suddenly those reactions maybe mean a little more than they would otherwise. So in my opinion, this is just a really gutsy write, you know, to communicate some of the experiences in here. What did you think, Pam?
Wow, that was, well, just absolutely powerful. Wonderful SoundCloud. You put, like Vivian said, you get the pain, the anger, and I like that it's not just about his pain, though he expresses that. It's about the pain of a history that people have gone through and survived through. And the idea of trying to destroy people, not always physically, but trying to destroy them by erasing who they are, it is so horrifying. On technical level, this had wonderful rhyme and flow, but more important, it just really struck a chord on an important subject of racism and how we treat people and what gets overlooked. Just a powerful, heartfelt write and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, just the abuse of an entire group of people, you know, it's kind of astounding, and just that kind of you know, what the people have gone through and the ways that it happened to them. It's just kind of, it's hard for me to speak to having not experienced it, you know, but I'm still, I guess, you know, I like to hear the stories, because if the stories aren't shared, then nobody knows, you know. That's how traumas and negative things and things like systemic racism happen, is when you don't hear the voices of the affected. So I think it's just really important for these kind of stories to be shared. You know, even if I can't necessarily speak to it or add anything to it because it's not my experience, I feel like there's a big importance in the sharing and the listening. So I really appreciate the share.
We are going to do a collaboration that I did with some of the people in the group Disabilities. Let me look at who was all in it. Faisal Farzi, Poetic Picasso, WizKid, Chaos, and Tans. And me. There's an audio for this.
All right, here we go.
The this is a manuscript of play from Shakespeare.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. In love, nothing is given in return. No matter how much of you learn in the hard way or learn in mistake. For that is profound heartbreak.
Nothing more primitive, nothing
End of poem.
Wow, that was... I really enjoyed that. I love the rap compilations because of all the different voices that you hear. And just, you know, all the different ways people write and communicate, I find really fascinating. Who mixes these, just out of curiosity?
Usually Tans or Beast. Tans did this one. So we're on BandLab, and we all submit our pieces to it. And then Tans or Beast kind of, or sometimes Rebecca, but she wasn't in this one, piece all of our bits together. This was mostly a Tans put together. Frank started it, so we take turns being the person who starts it, and one of us will put a poem and say, like, add to this, and then everybody throws in their bits, and then we kind of argue about the order that we're going to do things, and then Tans rearranges it.
Nice. I really enjoyed this and just all the different messages. It looks like the inspirational quote that I see in the footnote here is in love, nothing's given. And I like all of the different ways that line is interpreted throughout here, you know, from earning love to not being willing to give love to learning to love yourself, to physical love, to emotional love. You know, it really comes at it in all facets here, and I think that makes this a really deeper collective piece. So I really enjoyed that about this. Also, as a note, just Frank's little end bit with the love and respect to our mothers and women just reminds me of, the Beastie Boys song. I don't know if anyone else knows what I'm talking about, but... the Beastie Boys are kind of known for being pretty disrespectful to women in their earlier years, but then as it went on, there was a song that they came out that was about respecting women and their changes in perspective and just kind of how they'd grown as people that really kind of changed their image significantly for the better. And I remember there being this interview about how they felt about being hypocrites, and they were like, well, I'd rather be a hypocrite than a person who has a bad worldview and never changes. So it just made me think of that because of the similarity in wording. So anyway, I enjoyed the piece. That was a great piece. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree. This is a great piece. I like how there's a connection because they're all writing to the same quote, but yet in the way that it's in different voices and different perspectives is really great. And I always enjoy when Aviana and the others from the disabilities group does collaborations because it does get tied together really nicely, really good, great quality sound clouds. And everybody really just brings their A game. All the way through, I mean, there isn't a single one that doesn't have great rhyme and flow, hard-hitting lines. And I have to kudos to Tans for putting this one together. And this is awesome, Aviana. You all did a great job.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I've had so much fun working on these projects. I'm not naturally very musical, but I really enjoy writing with this crew and kind of forcing myself out of my comfort zone, attempting to go to the various beats that people choose. Our next one has a banjo because Cal played the beat for us. So it's quite a different sound, and we've all switched up, and Dexter's in that one, too. So it's going to be fun.
Oh, cool.
I've been on a bluegrass kick lately, so banjo's right up my alley. I've been listening to a lot of bluegrass music in the last month or so for whatever reason. Just feels like my soundtrack for the summer.
Well, we still kind of wrap it a little bit, so it's going to be a very unusual banjo, but hopefully it's fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure it will be fun.
I just noticed that you added a piece to the board. It's you.
I did. Okay. This is edges. The edges were sharp ones, slicing through tender flesh like it was nothing. Words razor thin, slipping under my skin. It would have been easy to let it go, to not care and spiral and named youth go, hunker down and self-medicate with black substances that fill lonely palms. But the stuff I'm made of is rougher than that, sanding down the edges of those blood-soaked words that fell from your lips until they are smooth and harmless, devoid of meaning. Turns out, I've got grit. End poem.
Wow, that is awesome. I really liked sanding down the edges of those blood-soaked words that fell from your lips until they are smooth, harmless. It's like the idea of blood-soaked words, that those words were really harmful, but you managed to sand them down into the point where you're not going to let them hurt you, and they've lost their meaning. The idea of slicing through tender flesh, because your edges were sharp, but now you've got it. It's the end of the night. I'm having trouble forming words, but this is really well done. And I'm sorry I didn't notice it earlier because I should have read it with the grit contest. I don't refresh enough.
No worries.
Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I think this is awesome. You know, it's unfortunately a sad reality that oftentimes we develop grit because of abuse gone through. And I like how this talks about the razors, words razor thin, slipping under my skin, and the idea of how much words can hurt. There's just some really visceral imagery throughout. And then I really like the idea of sanding down this person's words or these people's words until they are devoid of meaning. And there's a slightly humorous tone to me in that ending line, the idea of somebody who suddenly realizes, turns out I've got grit. I mean, that is such, that there's such attitude in that one line, of that realization of what a strong person you are. It's just excellent write and very well done.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I guess it's probably about time to wrap up the night, huh?
Yeah, so next week's contest is called Eggshells. You can find it on my page, Aphasiana. Those eggshells you walk on to keep peace only get louder the more you avoid why you have to walk on them in the first place. Sweep them up, pour them in the middle of the room, and refuse to ever bend to someone else's breaking ever again, even your own. You're bigger than the trauma you learn to walk around, for fear you may wake a monster you know well. Walk straight through it, babe. It's the only way. That's a quote by Stephanie Bennett Henry. So that's our prompt for next week. I look forward to hearing what people have to say inspired by that. Thank you so much to Babbler, Pam, Lynn, and everyone who wrote for the contest and gave us SoundClouds and have shared your words with us. I really appreciate all of your poetry. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Do without people writing. Always appreciated.
And thank you to Phil for letting us have this show. Good night, late night poets.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.